Caregivers, have you ever felt like nothing is going right? Well, cheer up and welcome to DAVE, the Caregivers Caregiver Radio Program, where you'll learn how to avoid that dreaded thing called caregiver burnout and how to survive the grieving process. Join Dave and his guests now as they share practice tips and tools that you can start using immediately to help get you through this day. Now, here's your caregiver host, Dave Nassani.
A big L.A. and Los Angeles, New York City, Manhattan, Big Apple, Big L.A., all of it. Welcome to all my listeners out there in Radioland. I messed that one up, didn't I? I'm Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver at CaregiverDave.com, along with my lovely co-host, Adrian Gruberg, at TheCaregiverSpace.org. Coming to you live and on demand 24/7 on 16 global and audio video platforms. You know, iTunes, YouTube, Spreaker, SoundCloud, Vimeo, Stitcher, and about 100 others. And also at CaregiverDave.com. We're so proud to be voted number 2 podcast out of the top 6 caregiver podcasts by Caring.com. And I'm sure we'll make number 1 in 2008. As soon as I get those numbers, you'll find out. And we have an exciting show planned for you today. Lisa Call. Am I pronouncing Call?
Yes. That's correct.
How to care for and be an advocate for yourself, and just learn how to take a new leasehold on life as well. But before we get started, I want to take this moment to thank my last week's guest, Kate Vessler, speaker, coach, resilience in transition expert. You can watch or listen to that interview and all our interviews on our membership website, caregiverdave.com, or at any of our other 16 global networks that I mentioned earlier, like iTunes, YouTube, SoundCloud. All right, enough of that. Lisa is a real estate agent, a Toastmaster, an Air Force vet who has lived a full life. She's a wife, a mother to her 13-year-old, married to an LAPD detective. Watch yourself. Last summer on her 52nd birthday was diagnosed with breast cancer. Happy birthday.
Right?
Lisa, welcome to the show. So excited to have you on.
Thank you.
Why don't you take a minute or two and introduce yourself? I like to ask my guests just who is Lisa Call and why was she put on this earth? And while you're doing that, I'm going to try to simulcast say, Facebook Live on you guys' site. Okay?
Okay, great. And wow, let's start off like with a big question. Why was I put on this earth? Well, I think I've been trying to find the answer for that for most of my life, especially when I experience the things that I have throughout the course of my life. Why is this happening? Why am I here? Mm-hmm. And it seems I always go back to perhaps I'm here as an example for others of what you can do, how you can break through, how you can inspire other people, and not necessarily on a big, huge platform. I think sometimes when we face adversity, there are ways that we can work through it in a quiet, meaningful manner that can speak volumes to so many people that you're not even aware of who are paying attention to you. So why am I put here on this earth? Sometimes I think it's just to bring a smile to other people, to bring a smile.
That's cool.
And to lift them up in any way that we can connect.
That's cool.
I like your answer.
Well, thank you.
I think that's the best answer that we've ever had. Would you agree, Adrian?
I like it a lot. I have to go back and listen to everybody else. But
it's certainly up
to
there.
To inspire and make people smile, what could be better?
Okay. Adrian,
be an example?
Adrian, what? I was going to say before she answers that, you're posted on Facebook Live, but Lisa has settings that cannot do it. So I messaged you, Lisa.
Oh. Okay.
So maybe while we're talking or while you're talking, if you're multifunctional, you can just copy the link that I put on your messenger and put it on your homepage so that you can be simulcast as well.
Got it.
You
okay.
have some privacy settings that won't let me do
oh,
that.
Oh, you know, yeah. I do. I forgot she's, about those.
She's married to LAPD, you know. It just comes with the territory.
It we
don't
does.
Just put
it's
ourselves
self-protection.
Out there for anybody to just see, you know. We have some privacy issues. Okay. Anyway, what was your question, Adrian, to her?
Oh, I said privacy issues.
No, before that, before I interrupted.
I don't know.
Okay. So we'll go to question number one while she's doing this, because she can think and chew gum at the same time, right, Lisa?
Yes, I think I can.
Okay, well, we'll see. Why does a mild-mannered real estate agent, Air Force vet, mother and wife who just turned 52 become someone who became quite adventurous, a world traveler, a skydiver for a 52nd birthday, went to Antarctica last Christmas and New Year's? Hello. I always tell people, and Adrian is a witness, to live your life like it's the last day, last week, last month, last year on Earth. It seems like you already got that memo, Lisa.
Yeah, well, here's what I'll say to that. I grew up with parents who loved to travel. Mm-hmm. My father, I have this memory of him, and we were driving across country in his truck going to visit family members in different states. I remember him backpacking through Europe, pictures of him in Egypt. So wow. I always had this sense of there was something larger than what I was living here in Santa Clarita in Kenyon mm-hmm. Country, California.
Wow.
And that just, it grew in me. I feel like I have the travel gene, so to speak. But it grew in me. And after high school, I did go into the military, into the Air Force. And one of the main reasons I went into it was because I wanted to see the world. I knew there was more out there. There were people out there who I had not met before, and I just wanted to broaden what I thought this world is and mm-hmm. was. Mm-hmm. So the travel bug's been in me for quite some time.
And apparently it's in me too, because I have been traveling a lot, and the more you travel, the more you want to travel. Isn't that
right.
weird? Adrian, are you a traveler, Adrian?
I was.
He was a traveler.
I was a traveler. Traveled all over the world.
Wow. Lucky you.
I lived in Africa.
Oh, my gosh.
Wow.
And I keep telling my wife we need to go to Africa and do that safari thing. I saw this movie where these two people got a divorce or something, and they had planned this African safari, and now they didn't want to go with each other, so somehow they didn't want to waste the ticket, so they went with each other's boyfriend, girlfriend, mm-hmm. you know. And I says, how cool is that? You know, the hotels there are just, my gosh, majestic, you know, palatial.
Unless you're living in a tent.
Well, there's certainly two ways of doing it, I guess.
Yes, there are.
Lisa, were you able to get that link posted on your site yet?
I am doing that right now.
Okay. So, you're a breast cancer survivor. So, see, I just tell people to pretend like it's your last year or last month on Earth, but you actually got the call. You said, you know what, you've got, was it stage 4, stage 3? What was it?
It was stage 2A, which mm-hmm. was invasive ductal carcinoma. It's actually a common diagnosis for women. It's a very common diagnosis, yes.
But I'm sure you thought about, gosh, if I do nothing, I could die, right?
Yeah, you know, when I received the diagnosis, I had already done a lot of traveling, a lot of adventure stuff. I've driven a race car at the Saugus Speedway.
Oh, so you were already this crazy person.
I was already kind of cuckoo crazy anyway.
it took you to the next level.
Yeah, it really did. And so when I received this diagnosis, I knew it was survivable. This is a very survivable cancer. There's no reason not to. But I did have a moment where I took a step back and I questioned, wow, if I were to die tomorrow, like, would I be okay? Would mm-hmm. I be okay with the things I had done? Mm-hmm. And I think for me, I'm just a reflective person naturally. I always go there to that deep spot. And so I looked back on my life and I thought, I don't think I would have any regrets at all if I were to die tomorrow. I would, however, regret missing the moments that I would have with my family, that I would have with my daughter. My daughter was 12 years old at the time I was diagnosed. And for me, it really brought that component up to the front of the stage.
Mm.
And I started focusing more on family. In the past, I thought, I am focusing on my family. I'm doing things with my family, for my family. Mm-hmm. But it made me question, was I really? You know, I had a very busy, I'll say busy life. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of people use the term busy. Some people use the term productive. Other people are like, oh, yeah, we got to, you know, hustle and grind, hustle and grind. And I just decided I need to stop that hustle and grind. I need to slow it down and take the moments to really cherish that I have with my family. And I honestly really wasn't doing that. And this forced me to stop and pause and listen to that component, to really focus on my family, on my daughter.
Wow. You have beautiful hair. Did you lose all your hair?
I'm laughing because I went to a holiday party, and one of my girlfriends walked up to me and she says, oh my God, you have all your hair. You haven't lost any weight. Like, what's going on? You don't look like a typical cancer survivor, and not everyone looks the same. So yeah, I still have my hair. I never lost it because I didn't have to go through chemo or radiation. My cancer diagnosis was caught early enough, very fortunate, caught early enough to where I didn't have to have chemo before my surgery. Now, going into the surgery, I wasn't sure if I would need chemo or radiation afterwards.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So we went through it all, and I chose to have a bilateral mastectomy, which is a double mastectomy. Mm. And because of that, and because of there was no spreading, it was stage 2A, there was no spreading, nothing in my lymph nodes. Even though they took my lymph nodes out and I went through all that testing, I came out clear. Mm. And so because of that, I did not have to have the chemo or the radiation. But I still am going through the process with the oncologist and their recommendations.
Oh.
Yeah. And I'd like to mention this too, because it really brought me to my knees. I made the hard choice to have a bilateral mastectomy, even though I didn't have to have both breast tissue removed. But something in my gut was telling me, I just want it all out. I want it done. I don't want to have any more issues. I don't want to keep going back and forth to the hospital for more procedures. That was a big deal for me, especially having a 12-year-old. So I elected to have the right breast also removed. My pathology came back. In fact, I was walking around the Walmart here in Santa Clarita when my surgeon called me and she said, you made the right choice.
Wow, that's amazing.
My pathology came back and it showed cancer cells in my right breast, which were not detectable through any of the other tests, the mammogram, the ultrasounds, nothing.
So they were all looking at the left one, huh?
Yes, yes. Wow. We're all focusing on the left one.
Well, listen, we're going to take a break, and that'll give you a chance to finalize your Facebook post that I sent you. And so we will be right back. Don't go away.
One arm, one leg, 100 words. Overcoming unbelievable hardships is about Charlene, a stroke survivor. Back in 1996, Charlene was a healthy, normal, very active 52-year-old woman whose amazing talents resemble that of both a Martha Stewart and a Wonder Woman. But all that changed when she suffered a massive stroke that left her severely speech impaired and paralyzed on the right side. Everyone who knows Charlene is thoroughly amazed at how she lives day by day, month by month, year by year, and with a smile on her face and hope in her heart that everything is going to be okay. Just hear what best-selling author Lynn Barrington has to say about it. If you think you have it bad, read this book. This is a beautiful, genuine story told from the heart. It's inspiring and easy to read. When you finish this book, you'll be able to look at your concerns in a new light. One arm, one leg, 100 words, overcoming unbelievable hardships. Available everywhere.
And we're back with Lisa Call and Adrian Gruberg on the Caregiver Dave Show. And I'm Dave Nassani. So we're talking with Lisa, cancer survivor, and just someone who's just a wild party girl who has taken
Don't tell
it now
my husband.
To the next level. We met in Toastmasters, and I remember you did a speech one time about your husband. And that yes. was so funny. I can't even remember what you said, but remind me, what was the short topic of what you were telling us about your husband?
It was about a love code. And it was a love code that we created because my husband had a hard time saying, I love you, when we were on the phone when he was at work.
Typical cop.
Typical cop, right? So I had to find a way around that, and I created a code, which was 822. That was actually the day of our first date. So I used that as our code, our love code.
Oh, I love it.
All right. And it's okay if other people steal that, right?
Oh, absolutely. Just don't use my code.
Just don't use your code. Okay. So I make it no secret, I've spoken with Suzanne Summers on the stage at Harvard, and I'm going to do it again this May at the Harvard Club of Boston. The first time I was on the campus. And I was so impressed at who she really is, as a person and just a real human being. And I understand her book, Knockout, where she interviews doctors about, preventing cancer and how they've cured cancer and all of that, changed your life. Tell us about that and you and Suzanne.
Yes, this book came to mind. Suzanne Summers came to mind. I know she's a advocate, not only for herself, but for other women. Yeah. And I started reading the book because I was questioning my diagnosis. I was wondering, how did this happen? Why did I get this? And I just wanted more answers. And some of the answers I was getting from the doctors didn't settle with me. They didn't sit right with me. So I started reading her book. And what I love about it is it's not just Suzanne's voice. It's not just her words, her experience. She interviews doctors who have practiced standard of care, but also some alternative methods. And as I was reading through the book, I was realizing that not all chemotherapy pills, chemotherapy itself, is for everyone in everyone's body because we are all different even in our cancer diagnosis. So for instance, I'm what's called ER-PR positive and HER2 negative. And it's very different than someone next to me who may be a triple negative. So
what's all that mean?
Yeah, it has to do a lot. Like, so ER is your estrogen receptors. It's the receptors in my body. They are very sensitive to estrogen. And so my cells react quicker than if you're not sensitive to it. And also progesterone positive, the same thing. My body is highly sensitive to progesterone. So when my cells interact with that, that's what helps them, like it's a part of the factor that causes them to mutate into a cancerous cell. So I wanted to look into what else could I do for myself. Like, I know the doctors want me to take this nice pill for the next 10 years, and I just wasn't sure that that was the pill for me. And doctors have a tendency to prescribe, I want to say, just universal pill because
one size fits all.
Yeah, one size fits all, exactly. And they only gave me, two options, and I just wasn't sure if those were the right options for me. So in Suzanne's book, in reading her interviews with these doctors, there were common threads that came up for me. And one is, not one size does not fit all. And paying attention to my body. What am I putting into my body that could have factored into this equal sign that says, okay, Lisa Call, you now have cancer. So how I treated my body, how I feed my body, what I put into it has become so much more important than before. When you're younger, you think, you're going to live forever. You think someone else is going to get this diagnosis. You're not going to get
it.
And so there were just common threads with these interviews that Suzanne did with these doctors. And a lot of it focused on nutrition, vitamins, and really what we're feeding our body. And it made me question the oncology pills that were recommended that I take. So along with that, there are tests that you get with the oncologist, with all the surgeons, all the different departments. And I had what's called an OncoDX test. And that is a test. It tests your body to see what is the likelihood that cancer is going to reoccur inside of your body within the next 10 years.
You found this all out from her book?
Yes, actually, a lot of the information.
Nobody talks about this stuff.
No, they don't. You know what? And I think also that's why I want to talk about this, because no one is.
Right.
And you're going to write a book too, right? We'll talk about that later.
Yes, I'm going to write a book, yes. Good. So my OncoDX test came back where I have a 5% chance of cancer reoccurrence in the next 10 years. So what that means is I have a 95% chance of not getting it again in the next 10 years, which is amazing.
Yeah.
So I started reading.
Does that agree with the doctor's number, by the way?
Yes.
Nice to know.
So when I started reading about it's called a chemotherapy pill, and a lot of doctors don't like to use that term. It's like an after treatment, after women go through radiation or chemo. And I was reading the labels of the side effects for what was recommended for me. Yeah, it is scary, and nothing is guaranteed. But also, I was weighing the benefits versus the risks. And then reading Suzanne's book was telling me that there was more to it than just what I was seeing on the paper from the doctors. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm not bashing doctors. Sure. I've had a wonderful experience with my doctors. But for me, in my gut, in my core, I felt that there is another answer in here that is going to get me healthy, so I don't have to live with this fear of cancer reoccurrence hanging over my head. It's like a dark shadow.
Wow.
Yeah.
Anything to say about that, Adrian? She's no stranger to cancer.
I'm no stranger to cancer. I personally am a stranger to cancer. My body is a stranger to cancer, thank God. But no, I'm not. And there are just so many people who just blindly listen to their doctors and take the pills and take the treatments and don't know what they're getting involved in and don't know what the side effects are. Mm-hmm. I mean, when my husband was diagnosed with cancer, we were told, well, he'll have his surgery. And it was lung cancer, 1A. And then he'll be fine for a while, and then it's going to come back, and it's going to kill him.
Mm.
And, I mean, we did everything that we could. We did all the research and interviewed dozens and dozens of doctors and read and everything else, but that was the case. And he was fine for a while. Yeah, I mean, I think the one size does not fit all is very, very important for any cancer patient.
Yes.
To know.
Yeah. Well, so what is, if you can say I'm sure you've learned a lot of lessons through this journey. That's why you're writing a book.
Yes.
But out of all the lessons that you've learned, what is your biggest lesson throughout the journey?
Pay attention.
Mm.
Pay attention. When your gut, that inner voice, is talking to you, listen to it and don't dismiss it. When I started this journey, I dismissed that voice. I wasn't paying attention. I wasn't feeling well. And I thought, you know, I'm not taking care of myself. I'm not exercising. I'm not eating right. I'm not getting my sleep. I just need to change my habits. It's fine. And my husband, he said, go to the doctor. Like he was watching me just not behaving normally and not having the energy that I usually do. And I just dismissed it. And it got to the point, honestly, where he was kind of nagging me. And I was like, oh my gosh, stop it already. Leave me alone.
But you were in the what we call in the grief process, denial.
Yes. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And he was actually pushing me to get a colonoscopy. You're overdue for your colonoscopy. Go to the doctor. Just go get checked out. So through this process, I finally said, fine, I'll make a doctor's appointment just to make him shut up. In a nice way, I'll say. just please be quiet, leave me alone. And my mammogram notification came up that I was overdue. It had actually been 3 years since my last mm-hmm. mammogram. And I waited 3 years because I had stories in my head. I'm healthy. I have no family history. I don't need to go. I just don't want to deal with it because it's just so uncomfortable. And, you know, I was fine 3 years ago.
Or denial.
Yeah. And it's icky.
It is. And honestly, thank God he kept bugging me to go to the doctor. So I did.
And he's never going to let you forget.
I know.
Never.
Never. So true.
Now everything has been equalized. The woman has lost her power.
Yes, it's come back around. And so I went in for my mammogram. And it came back to where the doctor said, we see something. We want you to come back in. Maybe nothing, but just let's do some more tests on you.
And what was the first thought that you thought when you heard those words? Optimistic? Were you pessimistic? Were you fearful? Were you hopeful?
When he said, you have cancer?
No. When he said, you know, we see something. It might not be anything. Let's come in and look again. Those words.
Yeah, I was irritated. I was like, I don't have time. I don't have time to go to the doctors. I'm fine.
More denial. I was like,
I'm fine. But interestingly, deep down inside of me, even though I didn't think anything was wrong with me, like a red flag went up. Something alerted in me. And when I got called back in for my second mammogram and the follow-up with the ultrasound, I called my girlfriend of like 30 years. And I said, I need you here.
To go with you?
Yeah. I said, I need you here. I need you to come with me. But the weird thing was, I didn't think I had cancer. I didn't think there was anything wrong. But something inside of me alerted me, like, you need her here. Mm-hmm. I don't know what to call that. I don't know how to define it, but I
providence.
Maybe, yeah, perhaps.
Intuition.
And yeah, intuition. But see, I was still not listening to the intuition, though, because I did not believe that anything was wrong. In fact, when I was sitting in the waiting room for my turn to get scanned again, I looked around the room and I was like, I don't belong here. I don't like, why am I here? I don't belong here. And I was irritated. Even the nurses were like, are you okay? And I said, you know what? I just want this done and I want to go home. I just want to go home.
I'm sure they've seen a lot of that.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's funny of all the, not ha-ha funny, but of all the women that day that were in the waiting room, they all left and went on their way. And I was the one who was left there waiting to have my consultation with the doctor about these are the next steps. We need to biopsy you. And I'm sitting in a room looking all around.
So everyone else was okay.
Yeah.
But you weren't.
It's very scary. I will, you know, go for my annual mammogram. And then they have you sit in a little room waiting for the result. And while you're waiting, you know, it may only be 3 to 5 minutes, but it is so nerve-wracking. What's taking so long? What's wrong? It's very scary. And then I'm someone who automatically has an ultrasound after. Mm. But they need to see, because I'm cystic, so they need to see what they're going to be looking for in the ultrasound. So it's nervous time. Interestingly enough, my husband, my late husband, had to have a breast scan. And there aren't too many men that have them, but he needed mammograms. So some men do too. And that's not to be neglected.
No, it's not. And I'm glad you bring that up because there is, and I don't know what the percentage is of men that do and can get breast cancer. Again, it's one of those areas we just don't talk about.
Right.
Did he have rather large breasts, Adrian? what some would call man boobs.
Not big ones, no. But I mean, yeah, he would call them man boobs, but not huge man boobs.
I think
not floppy ones.
I think of Seinfeld and Kramer, who invented the bro. All right. Well, Lisa, you have an upcoming surgery, don't you? And it's not a surgery that anyone recommended to you. It's something that you decided to just do or reverse. Tell us about that. That's interesting.
Yeah. So a part of the process with having the mastectomy, you know, you're offered reconstruction.
Sure.
And I automatically said yes and went into reconstruction because I had implants in before. No shame there. So it just seemed like a natural avenue to go to.
Did you have to have them removed? Obviously, probably, if you had a double mastectomy. Yeah.
Yes. They took them out. In fact, I had two surgeons when I had the mastectomy. One to do the mastectomy, and then the plastic surgeon who started the reconstruction. I opted to have it's called an expander that they put inside of your chest wall. And after they sew you up, they fill up periodically until you get to the level where you're like, okay, this is me. I feel good. Now I want to have a permanent implant put in.
Right.
What I learned between the time my last fill up and today, I went in for a couple of fill ups.
Yeah.
As you do. And I learned that I have what's called a textured expander inside of me. And there's a whole market out there of textured implants for women. And I was approached by a lovely gal. I was volunteering for Sore Optimist International here locally in Santa Clarita, and I was approached by a gal who told me her story of what's called breast implant illness. Had never heard of it. I had implants in before, never had a problem. Honestly, I just wasn't sure if it was kind of a crazy story. I thought, maybe this is too crazy.
Mm-hmm.
But her story was compelling enough for me to want to do more research on it. And as I did, I learned, and amazingly, the FDA, like 2 weeks after I learned about this, the FDA came out and admitted that the textured implants, textured expanders, those textured devices, can cause lymphoma cancer.
Oh, God.
So as a cancer patient, it broke my heart to learn that I could possibly get another cancer that's not breast cancer, it's not related, and it's actually considered a man-made cancer because of the chemicals and the metals that are used to make the outer shell of the implants.
Uh-huh.
And for some reason, the FDA and everyone is pointing to textured as it's the correlation with the lymphoma cancer and the textured implants. It's also being softly correlated to a lot of autoimmune diseases. Mm-hmm. Again, there hasn't been a lot of reporting in this area, so there's not a lot of hard stats, but there's enough information out there to where Europe has banned them. They've been taken off the market in Europe. Canada is next in line, from my understanding, and there's still information coming out. I literally learned this information just weeks into my reconstruction process. So because of that, the reading, talking to women, listening to their stories, going back to listening to my gut, I have decided that I am stopping my reconstruction. It's not a common thing that women do. In fact, I think only 50% of breast cancer survivors opt to not have any implants or reconstruction.
Mm-hmm.
So in the middle of it, I've decided that I'm not going to continue with it. I want all the devices out of my body. I just want to live a healthy life. And I don't want to look back. If I kept the implants, I don't want to look back saying, well, I knew the information at that time, but I chose to ignore it. Because now my season of life is pay attention. Like, listen to your gut.
Right.
So because of that, Wednesday, I am going in to have my final surgery, which is to remove the reconstruction devices, to remove the textured expanders, and I am going flat.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, we're going to take a break. And when I get back, I want to share, I want you to share with us how your husband went through all of this, because, you know, there's just a connection between husband and boobs.
Yes.
And,
yes.
You know, I mean, they can't help it.
I don't blame you. Breasts
and
are
many
beautiful.
Women, many women are very concerned about how their husband is going to react to a double mastectomy and, you know, reconstruction or no reconstruction or whatever. And I think it just would be very interesting. So we'll be back. Don't go away.
Dave Nassani, the caregiver's caregiver, has just released his sixth book entitled It's My Life Too. Reclaim your caregiver sanity by learning when to say yes and when to say no. It was specifically written for caregivers who know they should be putting their needs first, but just don't know how. Dave is the sole caregiver to his wife, Charlene, since 1996. He knows firsthand what caregivers are going through, because he is one. And he now speaks all across the country, offering caregivers his incredible caregiver support package. Even the airlines tell us that in the event of an emergency, put your oxygen mask on first before you help your child with their mask. They know that those who don't heed their advice often black out, thus becoming unable to help either themselves or their child. And caregivers are exactly the same way. It's My Life Too. Reclaim your caregiver sanity by learning when to say yes and when to say no. We'll help caregivers who are neglecting their sleep, diet, and social life, and learn to put their needs first. Pick up your copy today, or buy one for your special caregiver. On sale everywhere and at caregiverscaregiver.com.
And we're back with Lisa Call.
How has your daughter dealt with all of this?
Oh, gosh, excellent question. Oh. Yeah, I've kept my daughter pretty much in the loop from the very beginning. When I got called in for the second mammogram and the ultrasound, you know, it's just, it's unusual for me to have a lot of doctor's appointments in general. And so I explained to her little by little as I went through the process, trying not to give her too much to scare her, but just enough information to where she felt I wasn't hiding anything from her. Mm-hmm. And at one of the first conversations, she said, "Do you have cancer?" Like she figured it out. Mm-hmm. And I said, "Well, baby, we don't know where I'm going through tests to see if I do." Mm-hmm. And so we just built upon those conversations, and I kept her in the loop the entire time.
How old at this time?
12.
12.
And
12 going on 20.
Right?
Fast. Yeah.
Yes. And so, you know, she handled it like a champ. And we had many conversations, just her and I, like in my car. And right. One of those, she asked me, "Are you going to die?" Mm. And I said, "I'm not going to die. This is a survivable diagnosis. And we're going to get through this together." I shied away from telling her everything's going to be okay and rosy, because I didn't honestly know, but I wanted her to know that whatever we were going to go through along the way, that we would go through together. Mm-hmm. And I would also ask her, "Is there anything you want to know? What questions do you have? What can I answer? Am I telling you not enough? Am I telling you too much? Like, I needed a gauge. You tell me, what do you need so we can go through this together?" And honestly, she was like, "Nope, I'm good. I know you're not going to die, so I'm good."
Now, you didn't have anyone in your family who'd had breast cancer, but now she knows that you have. So how does she feel about that? Is she aware of all of that?
Yes. In fact, a lot of the tests I've been going through, I've kept her aware, especially the genetic testing. So she knows that when she reaches the age, actually, because I have breast cancer and I'm a survivor, she needs to be tested 10 years before I was diagnosed.
Right.
So that's going to put her in her early 40s. Mm. I'm going to push for maybe in the late 30s for her because of my diagnosis. Now, leading up to this, if I can say, I didn't think I had a family history of breast cancer. And through this process, through the questioning and my own investigation, I did come to find out that I had a grandmother and an aunt who also had breast cancer, and they each had a mastectomy. And I was not aware of that before this. Although my genetics came back completely clear, it didn't show I had any genetics. That came back clean. So
there's some comments on the Facebook Live. Let me read some of them.
Oh,
those are always fun. Eileen says, "You rock, girlfriend." I don't know if you know who she is.
Oh, Eileen, yeah, she's a very, very good friend. She's been with me from the beginning.
And Mary sends greetings and love. And Adrian Bruce, thanks, Dave, for your support of caregivers. And Deanne Young, Lisa, this is fabulous. You are so brave and honest. Love you, lady.
Hi, Deanne. Wonderful
cool.
people.
You have a fan club.
They've been wonderful supporters throughout my whole journey.
Wow. Oh, you know, we were supposed to talk about your husband, and I totally forgot. So talk about that. How was he when he first found out about the double mastectomy? How was he when he found out you were going to do reconstruction? And how was he when you found out, oh, that one's off the table, sorry.
When you changed your mind.
To a flat-chested girl.
You know, when my husband and I got married, I remember him saying, oh, this is going to be a fun ride. It's going to be so interesting and so fun. You know, my husband's he's a very quiet guy. He doesn't talk a whole heck of a lot. And I remember the first appointment that we went to together to meet the surgeon. And he didn't say a whole heck of a lot. He just listened. And then afterward, we talked about it. And he said, I don't feel like I have enough evidence to really talk about it, to know what we should discuss, which way you want to go. And then when I told him that I really wanted to have, I call it the Angelina Jolie treatment, that was the route I wanted to go because I didn't want any future procedures or visits. I didn't want to revisit it. You know, he did have a hard time with it. I don't think he was happy. He didn't get angry, but I don't think he was happy. But then after we talked through it and I explained to him why I chose that, the research that I had done with all our options and the long-term care, he said, you know, do what's right for you. I know you're going to do what's right for you. And he ended up being okay with it.
Good
I mean, is he happy and thrilled? No, I'm not going to say he's happy and thrilled. I'm not happy and thrilled to have to go through this. I don't think anyone is. But I'm also looking at the long-term. I love traveling. I have a 12-year-old daughter. I don't think life is ending. This is not my last chapter. This is actually a new chapter. And so when I look at it and explain it from that perspective to him, you know, he gets it. Is he happy I'm losing my boobs? No. No, not at all. But, you know, make it work.
They're still there, aren't they? They're just a different shape. I mean, will they still work? I mean, I don't know anything about this.
Will they still work?
You know, do you still have a sensation, et cetera, et cetera?
Right. Well, I don't have any nipples. I don't have any areola because
those are important.
The cancer was found inside my milk ducts. Oh. So I had to have that removed in order to make sure I was clean. So I have weird sensations right now. I think there's almost like a phantom breast sensation where even though I don't even have any nipples, there are times where it feels like I do and I can feel them tingling. It's a phantom nipple feeling.
I think they call that FNS, phantom nipple syndrome.
We've coined a new term. Well. Yeah, so my skin is still the same. I have the scarring from it, and the feeling for the most part is not there, but it does come and go. I think as my nerve endings are trying to figure out what their next chapter is because they've been cut off. So I do still sometimes feel tingling in a circular motion, which is kind of weird to explain.
Is it a good kind of tingling?
Sometimes it can be. Okay. You know, this is an erogenous zone for women. And there have been, it is. And there have been times where there have been some tingling. I'm like, oh, okay, I'm still a woman. I can still feel. So yeah, comes and goes. It's not consistent.
Yeah, we just try to keep it real here at the Caregiver Dave show.
You're still a woman anyway. You know that.
Absolutely. And I think this choice doesn't mean that
Lisa
I lose.
Is still in there.
My femininity. Absolutely.
Not at all.
Yeah. I've never had the opportunity, thank God, to have anyone close to me who has had their breasts removed. So, you know, I've never seen what it was like. I guess I could Google it and
you
see it that
Google
way.
Google it.
Yeah.
I can text you a picture.
Your picture or a different picture?
I can text you my picture.
No, I don't think your husband would like that. Let's not go there. So back to the boob book. What do you talk about in your boob book?
Well, it's going to be.
I should say, what do you talk about in boobs?
Sure, my boobs. Better. Well, I've decided to share. It's really going to be about the relationship I've had with my boobs, with my breasts, starting from adolescence when I was first growing up and developing, and what my relationship was with my boobs, and then fast forward to in my mid-30s when I decided to get breast implants, why I chose, and the experience with that.
So you talk about all this in your book.
Yes, yes.
Wow.
And then fast forward to my diagnosis and coming to terms with loving my breasts no matter what they look like, no matter what shape they are going to end up being. So it's personal stories interwoven with my experience and research and knowledge.
I never thought of that. A woman does have a relationship with her boobs when they first appear, and then, you know, some women who think they're too big or too small and want to augment them in either direction.
Right.
Wow, what an interesting, I don't know
you
if any...
You never thought of that, Dave.
Not really, no.
Wow.
You just that's thought about amazing. Your relationship with boobs.
I mean, that's amazing.
Is that unusual for a man to, like, not
know. Think,
no,
put
it's
themselves
not,
inside of a woman's body and think about that? No, I never did.
I don't know.
We're too
know.
Busy
I'll
thinking
just,
about
I'll
other
just
things.
Know, yeah, there is so much peer pressure when you're growing up, when you're your first friend starts to wear a bra and you don't have anything in sight, nothing on the horizon, and you're like,
and I should
oh
know
my
better
God.
'Cause I'm a father of three daughters, so
yeah.
I mean, I've seen them go through that, and all of a sudden they start to, you know, bloom. And all I know is it made me very nervous because I knew boys were going to be knocking at the door wanting to touch these boobs. He didn't handle it very well.
So
you know?
He has a totally different relationship with boobs than we do, Lisa.
Oh, yeah.
Because yeah, I knew what I was doing at that age to girls with boobs, and I didn't want anyone touching my daughters. And I knew what they were thinking when they would come home, you know, for the prom, or not come home, but come to pick them up. And I would, dads, I mean, everything. They just, you know, and that, like the Robert De Niro thing, you know, he says, hey, you know, I know how to find you, and I got guns. Let's move on.
Dig yourself out of this hole, Dave.
Any last minute advice you have or takeaways that we can learn from what you've gone through and you haven't mentioned yet?
It's so important.
For women and men out there, men who are married to the women.
Yeah. I think it's just so important to be your own advocate. Do your research. Know what you're getting yourself into so you can be your own advocate. Like, it's okay to ask the doctors questions. To ask clarifying questions so you completely understand what you're going through.
Yeah.
This process, and I know I'm not the only one, from diagnosis to when I had my surgery, It was very quick. It was, I think, less than 90 days. And it goes by sometimes so fast, you're not able to soak up all the information or process what is happening here. And so for me, it wasn't until after I had gone through the surgery, started the reconstruction, I was really able to process. And that's when I felt like I was really strong enough to be my own advocate, because I had the tools, I had the information, I filled up my tool belt with knowledge and research and Suzanne's book and talking with other women who've gone through this process. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of people say, get a second opinion. Well, yeah. I didn't want to hear from more doctors. I wanted to hear women's stories. Right. I wanted to hear the real talk, what women really go through that they don't talk about in public.
Was there a support group?
There are a lot of support groups. There are a lot of support groups even in our own community here through a Circle of Hope. They have support groups on Facebook. I think I belong to like 8 different support groups. And it can be overwhelming. But in the beginning, I needed to soak up as much information as possible so I can make the right decision for me. And that allowed me to be the best advocate for myself.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know Lisa Cole, and I would expect no less from her, because you're just doing what Lisa does, you know, because, you know, we can predict, well, if so-and-so, if this happened to them, here's what they would do. And you've lived up to my expectations, so congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you.
So this is a show for caregivers, so let's talk about caregiving. Did you need a caregiver at any point in this process? And was your husband the guy who took that mantle? And if so, you know, was he a good caregiver? I mean, nothing against him or anything, but, you know, men generally are not good caregivers. Women are the ones who are empathetic and caring.
Oh, yes.
Men try, you know, but...
They do. They try. We got to give them credit for trying. Well, my experience with this is I didn't have just one person who was a caregiver who gave me support. I had a number of people that I surrounded myself with, people that I trusted, people that I loved. And it's interesting how I learned what their strengths were along this journey. And so each of their strengths kind of built up a support team for me that ended up being, I want to say, the ultimate caregiving, to say, because everyone has their strengths. Like, you know, for instance, my husband, he doesn't like to talk a whole heck of a lot, but he does support me in his own way. And he will be there to, you know, tuck me in and make sure that I have what I need nutritionally and take me to the appointments. And then I have my friends who, you know, it was okay for me to call and cry on their shoulder. And in my darkest hour, like, I knew they wouldn't judge me when I was feeling really, really low and didn't know what to do. So I feel the caregiving aspect of this was really in a supportive group setting. Mm-hmm. Going through this journey, it really is a roller coaster from one day to the next. You're up, you're down, you're feeling kind of okay, and then you just dive deep into these ugly emotions. And I don't think any one person could have been able to handle and support all of that in its entirety, which is why my support group of friends, I call them angels. They were my angels that were there for me. They made all the difference. And I learned, too, that the more I spoke out, the more courageous I became with sharing my story and talking about my feelings, the more support I received. Wow. So I think the takeaway, too, is allowing yourself to be vulnerable.
Yes.
Because you don't know what support you're going to receive, what will come your way. And it seems that it was always the right support I needed at just the right time without any indication or knowledge that it was coming, other than I'm just being open and vulnerable with what I'm experiencing.
Mm. You can be brave and vulnerable at the same time.
Yes, there is a lot of strength in vulnerability.
Absolutely.
Vulnerability has a bad name. It's unfortunate. Yeah. It's really unfortunate, but there's so much strength and beauty that can come out of that when a person allows himself to be.
You've grown a lot. You've gone through a lot. I'm assuming your husband also has grown a lot, and by what he's seen, what he's experienced, become a richer person. I don't know. How would you explain all of that?
I would say that we've grown closer mm-hmm. as a family. The conversations that we've had when we have them are deeper. They're richer. And coming onto the family page, we're more focused on moving forward as a family unit.
That's great.
Like not what people think. I mean, really diving deep in the deep richness of it, like to the point where if I have a couple of events or things lined up that bump heads, like say I've overbooked myself on a day, but I know right. there's something that has to do with family, everything else goes to the side and I make the choice of family first. And it's really a decision. It's a choice. Family first, no matter what.
Wow, that's awesome. So when you travel, the three of you usually go together? Can he get away?
Yeah, actually, we usually do. We have an RV. And there have many times when I've gone. In fact, my Antarctica trip, I went with just my aunt and I. So my husband and daughter stayed at home. So it was a mm-hmm. lovely time to have for myself. I like to go hiking and taking walks. And that's where I get a lot of my me time.
Awesome. Well, it's been a great hour. It went fast. That's proof that it's a great show because time flies when you're having fun. So, Lisa, how can we get a hold of you if there's some people out there who want to buy your book that is coming?
Yes, it should be coming this fall.
Any mm-hmm. questions answered or anything like that?
Well, I'm on Facebook, of course, Lisa B. Call, and you can also reach me at my email, which is mm-hmm. lisa@callforhomes.com, KAUL4HOMES.com.
So how's your real estate business doing?
It's doing good, although I've taken a little bit of a break. Since mm-hmm. this diagnosis, again, I've dialed back, so I'm on a little bit of a hiatus right now.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, until I recover from this next surgery.
Oh, surgeries are terrible, no matter what they're for. Adrian, how do we get a hold of you?
It's Adrian, A-D-R-I-E-N-N-E, mm-hmm. at thecaregiverspace.org. And all the other information to get to the caregiver space is on thecaregiver.org, and it'll take you everywhere. Thank you.
And I'm caregiverdave.com, and we have a membership website. You can join and get all of our content that we've accumulated for years and years and years that is on the internet somewhere, but it would take you 4 months to find it all because it's everywhere, but it's all in one place. And we also have free gift for you if you're interested in finding out if you're a candidate for burnout. I can't imagine anyone not knowing they were a candidate for burnout, but some people are out there. You take this little test and it'll tell you. And I also will give you a free copy of my first book about overcoming unbelievable hardships. So thank you again. We will see you next week, and bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Caregivers Caregiver Radio Program with Dave Nassani.